thank you for your very warm welcome. It's a real pleasure to be with you. We are glad to have the opportunity to visit places which we haven't visited before. Now, although we live in the frozen north, we're more than happy to travel to warmer climes and give some encouragement, we hope, as to the way in which the Lord is using brass tacks to help the furtherance of the gospel. Now, I always like to read the scriptures, and so I'm going to read the scriptures with you in Acts in chapter 16 and verse 1. And the Bible says, Paul came also to Derbe and to Lystra. A disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer, but his father was a Greek. He was well spoken of by the brothers at Lystra and Iconium, and Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him, and he took him, and he circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those places, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. As they went on their way through the cities, they delivered to them for observance the decisions that had been reached by the apostles and elders who were in Jerusalem. So the churches were strengthened in the faith, and they increased in numbers daily. And they went through the region of Phrygia and Galatia, having been forbidden by the Holy Spirit to speak the word in Asia. And when they had come to Mysia, they attempted to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit of Jesus did not allow them. So passing by Mysia, they went down to Troas, and a vision appeared to Paul in the night. A man of Macedonia was standing there, urging him and saying, come on over to Macedonia and help us. And when Paul had seen the vision, immediately we sought to go on into Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. Now, trust the Lord will speak to us through this reading from his precious word. In this passage that we have read together, there is so much that we could talk about, but the first thing that strikes me, and particularly with the ministry that we're doing, is the fact that here was a man called Timothy who met the need of the moment. Because Barnabas and John Mark had left and separated with Paul, and he was there with Silas and possibly also Luke, but they were down in numbers. And yet they met up with Timothy at the right time when the need was there. And you know, that has been our testimony as Brass Tacks since we came to the work about 5 years ago, that the Lord has raised up people to help us at times of the greatest need. And it's seldom that we've had to turn down a job because we didn't have the people, the skills that were needed for that job. And so we can certainly be grateful to the Lord's provision that when perhaps one person moves on because of age or illness or whatever, other people have come forward. Just last year, Paul and Angela Haney, who had been with us for a couple of years, they said they were going to be retiring, which to us was a bolt out of the blue. But just at that time, there was a couple from Northern Ireland who had been working with us on various projects. He had done 60 days work on the previous year, and we decided let's approach them and see if they might be willing to join us as full-time workers. And Phil and Jackie Kennedy flew over to Ireland to talk to them, and they said, yeah, we feel the Lord has been leading us in the same way. And isn't it nice when that sort of thing happens? You see God's hand in the provision. When Paul and Angela Haney came to the work, it was just what we needed. And when Phil and Jackie came to join us, it was just what we needed. So we're very thankful to the team that we have. You'll see photographs of them shortly. But then you'll notice also another idea, and it's the cross-cultural mission. A lot of our work is involved in other countries. We don't primarily work within the British Isles. In fact, we don't do church buildings in the British Isles. It's just a policy that we have. But we do other projects where the focus is on mission in the British Isles. But most of our projects are abroad. And here Paul recognises they're going to be working in across the different cultures. And Timothy, because of his home situation, he needed to be able to build bridges between the cultures. We're very conscious that we go out to join other people and help them in their work for the gospel, but we are working cross-culturally, and so it helps if we can fit in, if we can connect with the people. My French is no great shakes, but we managed to get by. And if we're in Zambia, well, I'm fluent enough in one of the languages there, so that's a big help. But then the other little thing is not only the people meeting the need of the moment and the cross-cultural aspect of the work, it's the fact that guidance for us is a huge thing. Now, for everyone sitting here, guidance is a huge thing. One of the hardest things for us to know is, where is the Lord leading me? What's he leading me to do? Where should I be that I might be in the centre of his will? And you'll notice that Paul the Apostle wasn't given permission just to go everywhere or anywhere. And that it says the Spirit forbade them to speak the word in Asia. It says that they tried to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit of Jesus did not allow them. And you think, wait a minute, you've been called to the gospel. So why can you not go to Asia? Why can you not go to Bithynia? I was talking to one evangelist who was a very good personal worker. And I said to him, tell me, do you speak to everybody that you meet? And he said, well, no. I said, well, why do you not speak to everybody you meet? He said, because the Lord doesn't give me permission to speak to everybody that I meet. There are certain people I come across, I just know that I should speak to them. And so he was being guided by the Lord in that way. Similarly, when we choose projects for progressing and helping people, I get so many requests across the desk, we couldn't possibly go to every project that we're asked for. So we have a project selection committee where we look at various things like, in what way does this enhance the work of the gospel in that area? In what way will it be supported by the national believers? And because if the national believers are not committed to the project, then it's very difficult for me to encourage volunteers to go and be committed to the project. And so we have this idea that we need guidance as we choose projects. But also, you'll notice the man from Macedonia, he appears in Paul's vision and he says, come on over to Macedonia and help us. And Paul took that as being a very clear indication that there was a work for God to be done in Macedonia. And of course we know that was the opening up of the way for the gospel to go into Europe. Now, it's interesting, isn't it, that this idea of come and help us. And one of our kind of strap lines is serving those who serve. And so our idea is that we want to be able to look at the work somebody's doing and see how can we help them to do that much better, whether by maintenance, whether by improving their building or whatever. So I'm going to take you through some things tonight, and it might not be all that... We'll cover it and then I'll go back and revise some bits and pieces. You know, I would like to tell you, I'm just back from Jordan, and I'll show you, because it's kind of fresh in my mind though, I'll show you some of the things. Is that up there at all? Is it showing anything? Yeah, there we go. The work in Jordan, we've done two trips in the last few months. It's a very interesting place, Mount Gilead. I've chased goats in Mount Gilead. Now, how about that for an accolade, you know? I'm up there with David and some other good people from the scriptures. Somebody actually texted me from another country, and he said, I cannot believe you're actually on Mount Gilead. That's about hard to believe. But the Christians were given a plot of ground on a steep slope on Mount Gilead. And so they use it for camp work. They've deliberately not invested a lot of money in it. And they keep it very basic and simple. and you're looking there at the sort of entrance as it goes downhill, and there's playing area, there's dormitories, and there's kitchens further ahead, but it's all very simple. Do you know that 4,000 to 5,000 young people go through that camp every year? They're not allowed to evangelize across different groups, but they have people from within the Christendom groups who send their young people, and they have camps, and many people have come to hear about the Lord Jesus and trust in him through that work. And we felt when we heard about it, there's a group called Manara Ministries, and a lovely old man called Isam Gattis, and I've met him previously, and he said, look, could you come and help us at Camp Gilead? And so we went there initially. They had a project for us, and when we went there, we thought, you know, actually the biggest need is not so much what they're telling us to do, but with such a run on the ground that when the water comes down, and it does flood down, they were getting the ground washed away from underneath them. And so we said, well, first thing is your drainage. You need to get a good drainage ditch taking the water away. And so we did that as a project, and then I've just come back from another project where Mark Johnson and I, he's a builder, we went out and we retiled their kitchen for them. The kitchen needed done. They want to enhance the facilities to make it more attractive for families to go to, because it was pretty basic. And so here is some of the helpers, Suhail, Camille, the guard, and then two Egyptians on the right there who are employed to help. This is the washing facilities. After a week of sweating and grunting all the tiles and things, we had to do a washing, and this was a clockwork twin tub, which was an amazing thing. And it takes 15 minutes to wash all your clothes. Imagine that, 15 minutes. And then clothes are much cleaner than they were. Now, you see the men standing on that grid. That's what we did in November. We hired an excavator, we dug a big trench, and then we lined it with concrete and two rows of breeze blocks, and then put a local company made up the metal grid, and it's all held together with reinforcing bar and so on. So now the water won't go through the camp, it goes across this, it goes through along this channel and disappears. And so somebody further down the mountain has got a water feature they never had before, and you can just imagine their surprise, saying, well, that's an amazing waterfall. Where did that come from? Well, we can tell them. And so when we were there, they celebrate Easter a week later than we do. And so that meant that there was a couple of days holiday and people coming there. And you'll see some of the young people from these church groups. Quite a few refugees as well were in at the service on the Sunday. And we joined with them on the Sunday morning. They have lots of play equipment. Needs a bit of attention. So I really felt in my two trips there that there's so much needs done. It could take a team a good month to go through that place and sort things out. But just a bit at a time. This is Mark. Actually, we had to take 40 kilos of tools with us. The last trip we bought a cement mixer and a big SDS drill, if you know what that is, for breaking up, for drilling through concrete and so on. And so they have nothing, so you go there, you buy everything and leave it with them. This is actually almost the walls completed. We had the old tiles on the wall, and then these are the new tiles in place. That stove on the right hand side there is the one stove that we had to cook with. So after a hard day of grinding tiles and grouting and so on, I was the cook as well. So amazingly, Mark didn't die on me, so that was good. It's a wonder that we didn't end up with food poisoning, because you've got all that grit through your food, you've got to try and make it reasonably clean. This is looking down the mountain towards, they've got an amphitheatre. You can see it there in the distance. There's a very semicircular amphitheatre. They sit round there. And the last time we went in November, I went with a friend, Phil Kennedy. You'll see him shortly. And we're looking out over the valley. And it was just the time when Donald Trump said that Jerusalem would be recognised as the capital, and America would move their embassy there, and so on. And so it upset a lot of people, and you could hear the mullahs going off in the mosques and so on. And I said to Phil, we're looking out, and it looked like one of these picture postcards. And I said to Phil, you know, it's got a real Middle East feel about it, this, hasn't it? And he said, is that not where we are? So we do have lots of fun on these trips. That's the looking into the kitchen. They were working also trying to make an area which would be suitable as a dining facility. The tiles on the floor and grouting and so on. We were working solidly. And in fact, they were waiting for us to take us away at the end of it, because it took us about 4.5 hours to grout the floor tiles. So that's Mark and myself and Suhail, one of the local brothers, who's a youth leader, and he leads the singing and so on. And I'll give you the PowerPoint. I just wanted to show you that because it's fresh in my mind. PowerPoint. Brass Tacks stands for British Assembly's Tactical Support. Now, actually, I had been doing the job I'm doing for about 2 years before I found that out. I just didn't even ask the question. It wasn't it. One time I said, what is brass tacks? How did you come up with a name? Because one time somebody phoned me up and said, do you sell these tacks for upholstering furniture? And I thought, oh, okay, right, I know what that's about. This is our team. Paul and Angela Dodds, they live just now in Cardiff. And Paul and Angela previously served the Lord in India for 20 years. And then we have Phil and Jackie at the top right with their two children. And Phil is a builder, so is Paul. And so I'm privileged to be able to work alongside people who know an awful lot more about these things than I do. And I just help and learn as I go on. And Sheila is the secretary. She works in the office 3 days a week. We allow her one day off, and then she's working at Tilsley in the library on a day and a half, or a day. It depends, it varies. Where she also mentors the students, so we're kept pretty busy. Now, although we do maintenance, and we do buildings and so on, one of the things that has been happened quite a bit in the past is training. And when you're working alongside nationals, you know, inevitably you're passing skills on, same as I'm gaining from working alongside people who are the professionals. And this man here, Rob Woodhouse, with a hand over his face, he works. He's got his own joinery business in Preston, but he loves going out to this place in Zambia in the northwest called Nyangombe. And it's right out in the bush, and they have hydropower there. There's a lovely set of waterfalls that they managed to divert some of the water down a channel, and it gives them hydropower. But it's a Bible school and a training centre and for camps and so on, so multi-purpose. And the reason he's got his hands over his eyes is because if you are a genuine carpenter and you look at the teeth in that, you probably would think it couldn't cut hardwood. But it's what they use for cutting planks. Of course, these are his photographs. He sent back this hapless cow calf that landed in the lake, so that was getting hauled out in a very undignified manner, but it's by its tail. This is one of that wildlife that he took a picture of, snake. And this is Colin Breeze, my predecessor. He loves continuing going back to Nyangombe, and this is him instructing how to put up a building with hands on, you know, to save the ring beam and the very simple scaffolding, but it works. This is inside one of the workshops, and there's Gordon MacKillop. Gordon previously served as a missionary in Democratic Republic of Congo, and he's now come down to Zambia, and he's been here for many years now. And when Barry and Rachel Haig left Nyangombe, just about that time Gordon and Sybil joined the work there, and he's developed that very well. Some of the apprentices, when they have served, you know, their training time, they get a certificate which they can then use at the mines and get a job in the mines, and they also get a box of tools. people send out second-hand tools, and they get these so that they can use hand tools in their villages and make some income from the things there. This is Colin supervising them, making up trusses for the new building. That's the trusses going into place. One of the little stories Colin once told is the fact that about spirit levels. He said, you know, I've seen spirit levels of all kinds. He says, I've seen some spirit levels without a bubble at all. He says, I've seen some spirit levels with several bubbles. He said, I've seen some spirit levels with a bubble just painted on. So, that's gone. Now, we have been, you know, Ruth Hadley, and we've done several visits to Angola, to that area, Sorimo and Beulah, and another place, Luau. I won't be showing them all tonight, but there's a school at Kamundambala, which was quite an old building. That's the old building as I saw it. You'll notice an unusual uniform. All the children wear white coats, like they're little doctors. You know, that's the school uniform. And the building was, because it's old, it was needing to be upgraded. So the plan that Jonathan Singleton came up with was this building, which is square in nature with a central open courtyard and a top hat at the top, just to give it make it watertight, but also allow the hot air to pass up and through the gap around the outside of that gap there. It allows good airflow and keeps the place cool. You can understand that's quite a lot of metal work, so it all was done and prepared in UK and then sent out in containers. So this is a slab going down and shuttering, guiding the guys as they're doing the cement, walls going up, and of course the inevitable soak away for the toilet. That's it in place with the walls, and the building goes up. Then of course the roof trusses had to be welded. They were welded on site and taken up to be put on. Quite a big project really, so far as the heavy steel is concerned, so we're very glad to say the guys returned on Saturday and no injuries so far, at least none that they're telling us about. So that's the roof structure going up there, and after the initial 6 weeks of the walls, that was then completed. And there you see a photograph of the school with the roof in place. Now the next challenge is we need to put tiles in there, we need to put plumbing in there, and so we're just praying that the Lord will raise people who are willing to go out and fit windows, door frames, do the plumbing and so on. Brian and Debbie Howden, they have taken on the responsibility of a lot of Ruth Hadley's work, and so they do need help to try and get that completed. Now we have done some projects in India because Paul Dodds has a very great interest in India. Up at Uti, the school at Hebron, we did a project. Well, it's a kind of water investigation because they were having to buy water for the school, and the kids were just given a small amount of water to use each day, which had to be used for washing body, clothes and all the rest of it. So we had a look at how could they get more water in the mountain area, and actually it turns out that somebody had used the best water for watering the vegetables. Somebody who's a real vegetable enthusiast. So we looked at areas where there's massive amount of weeds growing, which were actually using the best of the water as it appeared above the surface of the ground, and we helped there. But here, this is Coligal Mission. Now, just to explain a little bit about Coligal Mission, it's a school which was started by a lady called Florence Bird. And Florence Bird was a young woman of about 22 years old who went out to India over 100 years ago, and she got a piece of ground from people who had been gold prospectors, and they had not managed to find any gold. But actually it's interesting, the ground is full of this very dark granite, like black granite. It's probably worth a fortune, but anyways, she went north and during a time of famine, and she brought back a whole lot of girls, and then she built a hostel for them. And ever since, there's been a school work and a hostel work for girls. Some of these are coming from homes where they might be vulnerable in various ways, and so they now have two secondary schools, one's for the Canada-speaking people and the other's for the English-speaking peoples, and they're both similar. And then they have a primary school. So some pupils are, most pupils come in are day pupils, but they still have that nucleus of girls who live in the hostels. So the hostels were too small. And I think you can see from there that ripple thing was the original roof, where the idea was you have these like half pipes, which was the support for the roof, or was the roof. So we had a team of guys went out and took away the original roof, poured a new floor there, and then prepared the way for a prefab building to be put on top. So that's the prefab building sitting up there. It's all painted and nice now. I'm just showing the construction thing. And this is the inside as it was being prepared, the inside of the prefab. Then, of course, pouring the stairs. That's the stairs going up, going into place. And that's outside one of the school buildings. Again, same idea, fancy scaffolding, plenty of reinforcing, and the stairs would be poured. So that's some of the guys who were involved, with Paul Dodds on the right there from Cardiff, and the other fellows all came from Scotland, and they had a great time. After that, they went on a motorbike safari around parts of India, so they had a good time there. Now, this is a couple, we haven't done a project for them, but I just feel I should tell you about them. They've recently been included in the ECHOS International list. And Janie and Evans Mukumba have a very interesting work, because they do a puppet ministry. They make television programmes using puppets. They have a small house that they rent, and they convert one room in that house into a recording studio. And because it's puppets, they move a small amount each time, and he joins all the pictures up to make a movie. And they give that out free of charge on national television. And they do Zambia, I think they do also Malawi, and they were trying to get it in other countries as well. And they have got a plot of ground. I went to see this in Lusaka when I was there last year. And they have this large plot of ground, and what they want to do is put up a recording studio about 7 metres high, so they can get the cameras and everything up high, and also a house for themselves and a guest house. And down the bottom is a big area for children's ministries. They're very involved with children, and just now what they do, they go to a township and they open the doors of their car, they've got speakers, and they start to play music. And in any township out there, when you start to play music, the children will come, and as soon as you have an audience, they'll then tell them the Bible stories. So they do this just to go around the capital city where they're based. So we feel that they're doing a very strategic work, and particularly as they're able to get their programs onto national television. Now, I'm going to let you see. This is what they do. To wrap along, feel free, but that's what they do, and I think they do it very professionally. And I've never heard hymns to rap before, but this is a unique experience. and the kids love it. In fact, Janie Evans was in a village, and they want their programs to go on to analog television, not digital. They want it to be for people in the villages. And he was passing by this house, and he saw one of his programs on the television. And he said to the children in the house, he said, "I make these." They said, "No, you don't." He said, "I do." And then suddenly, his wife appeared, and she was doing the, you know, the talking into it. And he says, "And that's my wife." They go, "No." So, lovely couple. They came back to Scotland, and she had twins, and they've gone back out to Zambia. So their project is one where they're not going to be likely to have all the funds initially. So we may stage that in sections so that we can perhaps, when they're ready, start the work there. Now, I'm going to show you this thing in France. Aix-en-Provence in the south of France is near to Marseille, and they had a project where they were looking for a property that we could that they could develop in this university city. And they first of all they located a hairdressing shop that was up for sale, and they discovered that actually you could buy the shop but you wouldn't have access for fire escapes and things. So that fell through, but then they found another one, which was a restaurant in a block of flats in the ground floor. And it had quite a bit of space, so it was quite expensive. It had quite a bit of space, but they thought that they could section it off and use the apartments, rent them out to students, which would give an income to the project. And so this is the property. And we went to look at it. That was some of the plumbing that was there. And, you know, just generally it wasn't fit for purpose. So a lot of this had to come out. And we were looking at several rooms, and it looked like we could just take down the partition walls and then make one big room. But actually it didn't work out that way, whatever it does. When we the partition walls, we discovered the ceilings were at different heights, and so was the floor. So we went there. This is just looking round what we went to see, and so was when they took the things away, we noticed the floors were all different heights. So what we did was we raised the level of the floor by putting tiles on and then pouring a self-leveling floor to make it all the one area. The other thing they wanted to do was to put a toilet and then also a toilet and shower room for people on wheelchairs to be able to use in the church. Remember, this is an outreach centre, so they were thinking cafes, they were thinking people coming in, making a facility that would be as helpful as possible. So when we went, they had done a fair amount of work demolishing as a church, and we set to putting up the partition work. And that's a self-leveling floor poured. And then, of course, we had to double skin the ceiling because the noise, but they didn't want the noise going through the building. So everything had to be insulated, well insulated, and double skinned so far as the ceiling's concerned. And that's the wires coming through for the recessed lighting. But when we were there, they had this Easter service. That was last year's Easter service. And you know, it's amazing what has happened there. The two couples came together, Philippe and Brad, and I'll probably show you a video shortly. Yeah, I will do. And Philippe and Brad with their wives came, and they put their own houses up for rent, and they moved into the area, to quite a high-cost area, and they rented smaller apartments, and they live in there. But then other Christians came and said, you know, we would like to be part of this. So we met with quite a lot of young couples who had moved into the area specifically to start a new church in Aix-en-Provence. And one of the outreach services was at Easter time, where they actually killed a lamb and roasted it on a spit. And that we shared that afterwards. But they invited their neighbours to come and join with us, and so quite a few came along. I think there was about 70 people or so, 75 people came to hear the gospel message, and it was presented in short sections with sketches to get over the message of the Easter story. So that's some of the folks there. This is Paul looking at the roast lamb, which we were hoping to enjoy after the service. This is Philippe Pirilliat, and you'll see Philippe in this little video that I'll show you. And that's Brad Dixon, who's a French-Canadian, and Philippe, who's from Marseille. And he and his wife serve the Lord. Lovely couple. We've had them in Scotland. So that's the work going up with having taken away some things and trying to make as much use of the space as possible, being ready for the plasterboard. You see the insulation in there for sound, so that it doesn't carry through to the other buildings. So that's Paul doing his thing. But it was really nice because Philippe and Brad, they helped us just as we could. So we all worked together, enjoying some good French cuisine for the week. Then two Canadians came out, husband and wife, and they got on with the filling in the joints and the plasterboard. And then we sent back another team, and they did the tiling of these toilets. That's a toilet. And then built that wall to kind of, that was Philippe's wife's idea, to make it sort of break up the sort of bland area that they had. So they, Paul likes brickwork. He put up the and this is Philippe arriving with all his junk ready to go into the building. You can see he's wondering how on earth is that all going to fit into the small space. But this is the space as it is now, and they're using this for outreach. A lot of students pass by, and so the idea is they put tables and chairs out on the patio. They can come and use these, and it's an opportunity just to reach out to them. One of their own members was a kitchen fitter, so I presume that he fitted that kitchen out and made it really nice. This is the young people there who are being used for evangelism. So I think, will I do this? Yeah, I'll try and pick up this video thing.
Hello, I'm Brad Dixon. I'm going to tell you a story of how God provided a tool for our ministry here at Exxon Falls. Here a little over 3 years ago, and started partnering with Philippe and my Christine Peria. And one of the things that was on our hearts right away was how can we reach out to the students of Aix-en-Provence. Aix-en-Provence is a university city. There are 35,000 students in this city. We decided that to reach the students, we needed a cozy place that they could come to meet friends, drink coffee, and a place they could feel at home, and of course a place where they could hear the gospel. One of the big challenges we ran into right away was the cost of real estate here. It's a very expensive city, and we had €0 in our account. And over 3 years of praying, God miraculously provided funds to buy the building we're sitting in just now. And we just want to thank all of our givers who helped us out in that project. The next difficulty we ran into was the fact that this building was rather run down and needed a lot of work. This building was actually for sale for about 3 years with nobody in it, and we kept praying and praying that God would keep it until we could buy it, because it's currently situated very close to the university campus. When we got in and started looking around, we decided that it needed a lot of work. Floors, ceilings, electricity, plumbing, everything, basically windows. And we saw that we were in over our heads. So that's when we decided to call up Brass Tacks. And Alan Park flew over to come and take a look at the work site. And we're very happy with that. It's a good idea to come and get an idea of what the job looked like, how much time it would take, and if they would take it on. So we were praying for that, because we don't have many handy people on our team, which is rather small. We didn't have money either to do all the work done for us by someone else. And Alan came and submitted it to the committee, and the committee decided to take on the project. So once the job was accepted by the committee, and they sent a team of two people. First of all, Alan Park and Paul Dawes. And when the soil gets at work, we realize right away that we were in the hands of professionals, and they did a very good job. And about a month later, they sent back two people once again, Paul Dodds and Phil Kennedy. And our job basically was to keep them fed and have a place for them to sleep and bring in all the materials and help them when we could. We actually had a lot of fun together. The conclusion of all I have to say is thank you, Brass Tacks. I don't know if there are any people out there who are not convinced of the value of a mission like Brass Tacks, but I can say that it really makes a difference for us here in our ministry. We can already see the fruits of it, and they've done something for us that we couldn't do for ourselves. Merci, Brass Tacks.
So that project was completed. Very glad to have done it. Privileged to work with these guys. And next project I want to show you is in Tanzania. Now, for many years, there's been a work in Tanzania just at the foot of Mount Kilimanjaro. And it's a hostel for children. Some of them come from, have been abandoned by their parents. Some of them come from abuse backgrounds. And it's been running for, since the Riddles and then Alan and Jackie McKinnon. And they have now left that work, but it continues. And they use a child sponsorship scheme to try and fund what goes on there. Dennis Bowman, who lives not far from here, and he used to be one of the Brass Tacks team, he said, it's the only place in the world that you sat on the toilet and looked at Mount Kilimanjaro out of the window. And so it's an interesting place to be. And just to prove it, that's Mount Kilimanjaro. And with the telephoto lens. Now, the telephoto lens obviously brings it closer, but it's you can see it very clearly from the centre. I enjoy doing photography, you know, so that's some of the flora and fauna around. You see the butterfly there, it's beautiful wings. And this is another interesting little thing I saw, and it was a lawnmower that had had more welds than any lawnmower I'd ever seen before, and yet it was still working. And the gardener was doing a marvellous job there. The building that we were going to be working on mostly is this one, which I think was one of the original buildings. And being in sub-Saharan Africa, one of the challenges is termites. Termites love buildings, and they love the space between wood and bricks for some reason. It's their favourite part. And so this building had suffered from the ravages of termites and general wear and tear, and they wanted to rearrange toilets and showers to put toilets where there was toilets where there's showers and showers where there was a kitchen and so on. So it was an interesting job. Some of the people who go to are cared for at the centre. This man here has been there for many years, and he has this fancy buggy, and it's controlled by a little joystick, and he's almost completely immobile, but well looked after by his, as it were, his brothers that he's grown up with at the centre. And of course there's children of all ages. This fellow here, his age group, are leaving now, and they're going to find jobs and in other places and so on. But he is a lovely guy, well cared for at the centre. This shows some of the damage that has been inflicted over the years. The veranda for the girls' hostel, a lot of the mosquito net was missing, and you see the space around the door frames and so on was eaten away. You take the door frames off and you find that there's been lots of munching going on when you didn't know about it, and there was holes all over the place when the bats were coming in and such like, and so our job was to try and make the place less like Mosquito Central and more safe for the girls to be. The boys' hostel was also pretty bad. That's a mosquito netting that had rotted, and so we spent a couple of days going around all the boys' hostel putting new mosquito net in the windows. Toilets were needing attention, and so there's plenty to do. In fact, I lost count of the number of cisterns that I fixed in 3 weeks, and it was you could say we were flushed with success at the end of it, but certainly we left it a lot better than we saw it. This is the kitchen. They wanted this made into showers, and you can see it's fairly basic, and so they take this lot away. We were glad to have the help of some of the senior boys who learned through the experience and worked hard to help us take away the old kitchen. That's the termites have munched away through the side of the units, and then we had to pour a floor for the showers, and in the case of building the walls there, and making them sufficiently well plastered so that the tiles would have a flat surface to stick to. So that's the tiles up there, and the plumbing. Plumbing is always a challenge because you never know what the standard plumbing is in the country you're going to. In this case, we used galvanised steel plumbing, which we got threaded down town, and then it was connected into plastic pipe, which is also threaded, very thick-walled plastic pipe, which fits into plastic units or even galvanised steel junctions. So at the end of it, we had four showers, and they were all working and all facing the right direction, which is really a winner. Oh, the other thing was there, you notice the window. Well, you can't exactly, if it's a girl's shower, you can't exactly have the wall down to here, so that had to be walled up and made a space made for tiles. Taking on all the tiles off the toilets that the girls were using. I was down a sewer one day, and you know what happens, you take all the protective equipment and somebody borrows this and somebody borrows that, and so I was hauling out this weed from one of the sewer lines, and a scorpion came out and stung me, and I saw it scuttling back up the sewer line, and I thought, now I don't know if that's a deadly one or not. What should I do? So I sat down on a stool to be immobile, and I felt the poison going up my arm, and I thought, well, if it gets to my shoulder, I should go to a clinic. So as I was sitting there, Phil Kennedy, he had a sore leg that kept on locking up because of his hip. And I said, Phil, I'll tell you what, I'll swap you. You can have my finger and I'll have your leg. And he said, nah, because I know that what I've got won't kill me. So I asked the boys, I said, what do you get for a scorpion bite? They said, well, put some ice on it. Somebody else said, rub it with garlic. So there seemed to be no real consensus on the matter. And thankfully, it wasn't a serious scorpion at all. But it was painful enough at the time. We took out electric showers for the main houses. This was us fitting the electric showers. And the other thing that we did there was the children's play park. Over the years, sun and rain destroying the infrastructure. So that's, we had two carpenters with us who bought this beautiful hardwood. I mean, it was like rosewood. And so we bought a chop saw so that we could chop it and make life a lot easier and neater. And so that's then they finished the part of the children's park that was done again by another team who went out to do painting of it. And this is Johnny, one of the guys that was with us. You'll notice he's using a rechargeable drill and a whisk to whisk up a mixture in the beaker here. Now, that mixture was the cause of a lot of laughter because he brought cake mixes and pudding mixes with him because he was a bit fussy eater. But the problem was he threw the boxes away to say wait. So when he arrived, he didn't know what was in the packets. He just saw different colours. So hence a phone call to his wife and his mother to say, find out what's in this packet, you know. So that was him making up. We never knew if we were going to end up with Angel Delight or if it's a chocolate sponge we were eating raw, you know. So good old Johnny. And of course, you have to reward the workers, so that was a sight at a barbecue. Somebody's got to do it. These are the boys that helped us. Richard on the right there, he and his brother have been at the school since they were very, very small children. And Richard's is actually up at Tilsley College just now on a six-month placement. So you see what I said about that nice wood. They made bespoke window frames, and then somebody said, so you're going to paint it? I said, over my dead body. Far too nice wood, so we oiled it, made it nice, and preserved it, hopefully, with that nice red wood. So that's the lads putting together the window frames, which fitted snugly, because not one thing was congruent. You know, they were all kind of different angles. So in the end, it was put together nicely. Then we had a massive water leak that had been there for many years. Part of the design of the building just meant you were going to have a water leak at the valley. And so, mosquito skin. So that was the kind of end thing from the left picture to the right picture. More toilets, more showers. That's the kids. And we enjoyed eating with them. Our assembly gave us a gift of money. So every Saturday I would buy 6 chickens for all the children. And it was like Christmas time, you know. They didn't normally get chickens. So they enjoyed the food. Thank you, Dance. Thank you very much for coming, Brass Tacks. And we took the workers, the boys, out with us for a barbecue. And that was a lot of fun at the end of our trip there. So that's the lads with the completed window frames with the mosquito net in place, ready to go to the airport. Right, lastly, I think, is this mission house at Chitokoloki in Zambia. There's a missionary called Julie Rachel Elwood. You'll probably see her, G.R. Elwood. And she's a nurse at the Chitokoloki, and she was wanting to build a house. So that when Phil Kennedy went out, his job was supposed to be to put a roof on. But he went out and found that the roof, the walls were too low, and that if you were on the veranda, you're going to hit your head off the timber framework. So he raised the level of the walls, and then he only had about 2 weeks, I think. And then he put up the frame, and then the roofing structure on top. In fact, I think they were finishing as he was going to the airport. So that's probably where he left it. And then afterwards, they would have the job of plumbing it in for water and so on. That's not a Brass Tacks project. I just took a picture of a cathedral, in case you thought we were branching out. And that's not a Brass Tacks project either. It's a nice bridge over there. The fourth. Just so happened that we were there and I took that photograph. So it's my way of knowing that that's the end of the slideshow. So, what we're doing next, at the end of this, well, on Sunday, Lord willing, I'm going to Spain and we're going to do a job there in a recording studio. We're going to put some concrete down for a new boundary wall, just a short job. And then we're either going back to Angola to help with the school, or else we're going to start a mission house in Malawi, in Blantyre. And the drawings are going out with Jonathan Newell on the 18th to be submitted for planning permission. And then we're hoping to maybe start building Ananda Babu, a mission house in Blantyre. There's a plot that's already been obtained for the work. And he and his wife are Indians, nationals, and they're now missionaries in Malawi. So we're hoping to help them, and we're just praying that the Lord will supply them the funds that they need for the building. So there's also a house that we're hoping to go and finish in Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, a new couple who have hoping to move out to Katoka on the west side of Congo. And we're hoping to go out and finish their house and maybe do some repairs to the schoolwork. We've obviously been asked, we've also been asked to go a project in Kenya, a school in Kenya. Whether we'll get all of these done this year or not, I don't know. But we are kept pretty busy. And so we value your prayers for safety on these projects, as well as for a continual supply of people who are willing to give themselves. Not everyone's a tradesperson. We have people who are handy, that are willing to work, and we're always glad to hear of people that can give some time to the various projects. So thanks very much. That's it. Any questions? And I'll take any questions. Other than that, we'll go to prayer.
The units you put back into these places where there's been termites, can they be made termite proof?
Yeah, you can get fluid that you paint on it, which can help. And we did that. Also, it was only hardwood that we would put in, because if you put like pine or eucalyptus, it would just get eaten again. So anything we put back in is a hardwood. And you know, I think sometimes if somebody would just give themselves to going around and looking at the wood and spraying it with something when they see termites, but termites come in fast. They'll come up to a crack in the floor, and then you see a little pile like this coming up, just a single tunnel. And so you have to be sharp and on your, you know, hit it when you see it. But it's just a problem that you have. And with termites, there's a queen. And generally, if you don't get the queen in the nest, then you're going to continue to have big termite problems. So the idea is find the queen if you can. But most people can't find the queen, so you just have to spray and do your best. Yeah.
Where I work, if I didn't have my proper personal protective equipment, I'd get the sack. Obviously, it sounds it's a kind of different environment out there.
Well, we're becoming much more conscious, and we make sure that they've got something proper on their feet, and dust masks. But try getting builders to wear hard hats, you know, up against it. So gloves, yes. I always wear gloves, a dust mask, and my ear protectors and eye protectors when they're needed. But yeah, it's becoming much more of an issue. People are much more aware of it. I mean, I'll tell you a story. I bought my workers one time many years ago sweat boots just to wear on projects. We were building bridges. And unfortunately, they kept the boots for Sunday and only wore flip-flops during the week. And one time they were working on this, it's a structure of interlaced logs filled with boulders in the middle. And a boulder came off and cut the end off his toe, took this sort of last bit off his toe. And I wasn't there that day, but the workers came in the car and they said, so-and-so had an accident, a boulder came and crushed his toe. And I said, where is he now? We stopped it bleeding, it's okay. I said, how did you do it? He said, we held him down and poured battery acid over the wound. And so it kind of cauterized it. Now, I wouldn't recommend that as regular treatment, but I went to find him, and sure enough, I had to take him to hospital and get it sorted out. Sometimes homemade medicine's not the best. But we've been fortunate so far, and we're very glad of that. But certainly the health and safety is an issue. But I know that you go into these situations, the worst thing is people do not like wearing hard hats. They just don't. And that's British builders as well as the locals. So, yeah, thank you.
A lot harder over there as well, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes people, if it's in Zambia, people do send us out toe-tector boots and things like that, which cuts the cost and things. But we have liability insurance in place for all these jobs, and we're well insured, and so we're just very thankful that so far we've not had a major incident to deal with. Yeah, please help yourself to that. These magazines and the cups are free of charge. Help yourself. Unfortunately, I had a heavy run on them at the last place, so we don't have many. But I'm more than happy to post down other ones if they're wanted. They're free of charge, as the magazines. And if you're interested, perhaps in volunteering, I've got the business card there with the website. You can have a look at, see the projects and when they're coming. And that would be really useful if you let me know if you know anyone who might be interested in the